Aftercare. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We are back after the semifinals here at the Event Center at Bally's, and they're doing some housekeeping upstairs as we listen. They're doing the Conso winners. Jonathan Kinchin is joining us. JK,
what's going on?
How did it go?
Well, you know, I missed the cut yesterday, so that means that I did Vegas a little bit last night, so I was a little slow this morning. But it's always fun, man, to watch one of your buddies at the final table. It feels like every year that I've been here, we've had a friend at the final table. So it's always exciting to root for them. And I'm excited for Eric Bialik. I like to consider myself horse racing young. He's
proper
like,
young.
Yeah, proper young, horse racing young.
Horse racing baby.
Yeah, exactly. So exciting opportunity for him. And man, he was picking some winners today. Had a 6-1 shot. I know he hit. Played some short horses to kind of move up. You know, he's seen us, and he's seen Paul and Duke, and he's seen those dollars matter at that final table. They could be worth $25,000 at some point. So he's been picking up pieces.
What do you know? What type of prices he was playing today, or was he all over the map?
I'm pretty sure he took an even money shot at one point. He had a 6-1. He had an even money. He ran second at with a 5-2. And he's all over the place. He's taking what they're giving him.
Yeah, well, that's the like you say. You look at this pay table for the top 10, and you can see that what you're saying is true, JK, because. You know, first prize, 800, second, 250, third, $125, four, 100, 575, 665, 758, 5, 855, 5, 952, and 1050. Where else can, you know, a few cents or an even money get you at the least a few thousand and potentially as much as several hundred thousand? You go ahead.
And knowing Eric, you know, he's... I would say he's kind of a risk-averse guy. He's not one guy that's going to – he's not going to blow 10 for the small chance of winning 600. You know, he'll try to take what – he's going to take what they give him. He's not going to – that's just how he is. So, look, man, it's an exciting time. This always is when you get to the final table. It's a life-changing score for somebody.
You sat at the final table in – was that the first year of the final table? No.
No.
Second?
It was one of the early ones.
Yeah.
But when you – there was not drama. You knew you were going to make it. This is sort of a weird period where people might or might not know what that cutoff number is. I don't think Eric Wing said since there were two or three races left. I think the last we heard it was something like 285. What do you think's going through these players' heads as they try to figure this out now as to whether or not they're going to get the chance to go and sit up there and fight it out to potentially win 800?
I mean, I think what's going on in people's heads around these tables is probably what happened at 90% of the restaurants in Las Vegas last night. A lot of, man, if I would have done that, if I would have done this, I should have done that. Oh, I didn't do this. It's a lot of reflection, or at least a bad beat story. So. You know, there's a lot of guys that are probably wondering, man, I should have took that even money shot the other day that I didn't take.
It's amazing. The 3 days, and it can all come down to a few cents. We saw a player miss participating in the semifinals by 20 cents yesterday. It gets proven year after year. Now, the first several years of the final table were marked by stasis. There wasn't a lot of action. That all changed last year when Scott Coles made his furious run from ninth place all the way up to NHC Championship glory. That being said, speak of the devil, we have Eric Bialik right here. We'll put a pin in that question, and we'll talk to you. EB, you're feeling pretty good about the fact that you're going to be at this final table.
I think I got it. So I took two even money horses today to figure pad my number a little bit. And then I ended up hitting Paco Lopez in that Gulfstream fourth, fifth, I don't know.
The best part of the Paco thing was his root. Pete, did you hear it over here?
No, I couldn't hear it.
He screamed Paco for president.
I don't know if
podcast callback.
He probably can't even run for president here.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So, Eric, what was your thought coming into today? What were your preparations like? I know you had been super prepared for the first 2 days, and did you end up doing it on the fly? Did
here
you get up in the middle of the night?
Standings. Unofficial semifinal standings on the middle screens in the room. Scrolling to first place right now to see who will lead the way into the DraftKings final table. These are unofficial.
Eric
Bonham. 348.70 leads the way. Former champion.
Look at second and third are separated by 20 cents.
Amazing.
Wow, Brian Troop got up to 13th. Amazing. We almost had two.
John Nichols, 18th. Chuck Grubbs, 252.
John falls just short.
Not bad up there in the pay table wise for those 11 through 20 spots, but obviously not what you dream of.
Well, here it is, and let me give you the
see if it's popped up on the online.
Give you the specifics, and this is your top 10. John Vail, 348.70. And Eric can absorb this going in. And he's got a significant $19 lead on Ray Arsenault in second. Ashley Taylor as well, same, 329 and 328 for Goldsmith. So 329, 329, 328 for Ray Arsenault, Ashley Taylor, and Thomas Goldsmith. Then $14 down to Trey Stiles in fifth. 314, Chris Potteritz, 312. Eric Bialik sitting with us, 311. Mike Goodrich, 296. Ralph Magnetti does make it, ninth, 294.40. And the cutoff of the top 10, Michael Odorizio, 291.40. Just on the outside, Kevin Conroy Smith, Brian Troop, Jack Christian, Leslie Janis, and many more. Mike Bajic, grab that mic.
Grab a microphone.
We got five mics.
My Eric question is, what's your goal from here?
For the rest of the day? Pick horses I like. If there's a number I like, I'm going to take it. If not, I'm just going to try to just keep on moving forward. I got, seven or eight races? Just play who I like, but if there's a number I like, that'll come into play.
I would think there'd be some people out there who say from an EV point of view, this should be a case of your approach should be win or go bust. But for me as a horse player, seeing the differences between fifth and fourth and fourth and third, I would be more inclined to play who I like, regardless of that. Where do you fall on that continuum?
It'll be a mix. Definite mix of everything.
If you see something that can get you there, you might take more of a chance.
Exactly.
But
I'm not going to stab the entire time. I didn't get here by stabbing.
How much preparation have you done for these final table races?
None. I got to go work.
Go to it.
I want to mush myself.
Oh, before you leave, though, Eric, I got to thank you for your great performance to keep the streak alive against Michael Baychalk's table. We are still undefeated.
Congratulations, by the way.
Michael Baychalk joining us.
He told me he's going to do the Kevin Durant. Yeah, he said he's going to sit with us next year.
Right. I said, look, if you can't beat him, I just want him to save me a seat. Screw those guys, my team. My team, though, this year put up big numbers, and it still wasn't enough. And so I got your money, by the way. That was something. So Eric has not even looked, you think? Is that true?
Or? He has not looked, yeah. I was the same way when I went to the final table. I didn't look until I got there. You obviously didn't have a final table, right?
Thank God.
You don't feel like that adds that would have added something to the experience, or why do you say thank God?
I had a pretty good experience. I didn't need any more adding. I was good, you know. So, no, I love this. I think this is fantastic. I think this is a great look at this. I think it's a great add to the tournament. It really is. I love it.
One of my favorite parts is when you know there's no contest play going on anymore, no consolation, and you still hear people rooting in this room.
Oh,
it makes
me
happy.
That's
well, I just heard also that they're going to allow lot betting they're going to make a line on the last on the final table.
You're kidding.
Have you heard that?
No.
That's what I just heard.
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah,
true. It should be. I mean, shouldn't, right? I mean, why wouldn't they?
That'd be a lot of fun. I hope they do that.
I think that's what I heard.
I heard that to get the regular one licensed, you have to submit things like months in advance, and this sounds too good to be true.
Maybe it's too good to be true.
You know how those
I heard it from an unreliable source.
Okay. I think it sounds like a game of telephone where it started out with they should do. You know, seriously, that's why you don't have everybody in the betting, because they have to submit it at like November 1st to the commission to get it approved.
Correct.
Maybe they already got permission.
Let's hope you're right.
All it is an algorithm. It's like you run the probabilities and that's it. And you make a line. So
grab that. Here it is for the first time on these airwaves, on anything At the Races with Steve Bick related, the Baychak brothers together again for the first time.
That's right. Scary. Very scary.
All right. We want to know. You're older, right?
I'll be leaving now. Thanks, Steve. It's been a pleasure. It's been a wonderful pleasure to speak with y'all.
I love Steve Bick.
Well, so that answers old. That question.
I'm older.
And was he an annoying baby brother?
No. We probably fought a bunch until we were about 15, when we both got our driver's licenses, so we didn't have to be around each other anymore. We just go in separate directions.
And when he says fight, he means like we're throwing down, fighting.
We were Ollie Frazier before Ollie Frazier.
Are there others? Are there siblings? Just the two of you?
Just the two of us.
No sisters?
No sisters.
Who did better at the bar mitzvah? Who was the better bar mitzvah boy?
It might have been me, because when Governor Edwards got elected, he made an appearance at my bar mitzvah, and that kind of put it on the map as bar mitzvahs go. You know?
Michael's just getting abused at this table. JK comes up. His brother beats
Who's
him
next,
up.
Steve? Who are we bringing in next? Who Kevin Cox is coming in?
Yeah. who came to
Helmers
your bar mitzvah?
Helmers is around here somewhere.
Obviously not any important people.
Well, they were in jail, probably, whatever governor.
That time, it was right.
Fair point.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
The Baychaks. And are you up in Baton Rouge, too? Where are you living? Where do you live?
I'm in Baton Rouge.
You are? Okay, because I wasn't sure. So you both have to make an effort to go back down to New Orleans for racing, because you came to see me. You know,
I go quite a bit during the week. I like to sneak down there, go get some lunch, and hang out in the paddock, and you know, I just love the smell of the horses, and you get up close to them, and I'm by myself or with a buddy. I just like that, so I try to do it, you know, once a week if I can. But it's gotten a little more busy recently, so
yeah, no doubt,
can't really do it.
And I don't know what you do Monday through Friday.
I'm an attorney.
There you go.
Under the radar, solo firm. Love it, you know, but we have to work a lot harder than the other guys.
It's kind of an Atticus Finch thing.
Absolutely. I wouldn't go quite that far. I just want to follow in my brother's footsteps. He's the king.
Want to let everybody know if you
But the governor didn't come to my position.
Yeah, but he'll come to it now.
There you go.
You were actually
21. Too funny. Contest wise, you've played. I mean, you here and there, right?
I've qualified up until about 2 years ago, when my kids started playing travel sports. My daughter plays travel volleyball. My son plays travel basketball. And like Mike said, literally in his acceptance speech six, seven years ago, you can't just do this once a week or if you catch a couple of spare hours. It's something that you really have to put some effort into. And if you've got children, you almost have to ignore your family to concentrate. and the handicapping's got so good now, it's just to another level. So if I get lucky, which I have not been, I can maybe make a contest. But I'm out here as the wingman extraordinaire, supporting the champ.
And the champ, the champ, always a fabulous sport. Do we have some thoughts about how to approach this, you know, this table and the way things are laid out?
And Ralph, how
Ralph,
how you
grab
doing,
that,
buddy?
Grab that stick.
Well, I'm never finished with you guys.
Wait, you think we're bad luck? I thought we were good luck.
I don't know. It remains to be seen, right?
Ralph Magnetti sitting down. And, Ralph, your thoughts heading into the final table?
I got a lot of work to do.
We won't keep you. We won't keep you long. But you fought back. You were in, you were out, and you searched the end. What was the key horse for you in the semifinals?
Today? Well, I had the favorite at Fairgrounds. That was my only winner.
Wow.
And then I had the six-horse Thaneberry at Aqueduct that came in second, and that was enough. I didn't think I was going to be there when they put it up, but there I was.
Fantastic stuff. We'll let you get to work. We don't want to interrupt, okay, but we'll catch up with you later. We had such
right,
a nice
thanks.
Visit yesterday. And Godspeed, my friend. Yeah, it's a tough stage. These folks, they have a lot of work to do.
Ralph Magnetti, back to the boys, Bacik and Bacik. How does a guy like Ralph at this point, how does he approach things? Because other than Scott Coles last year, it's been unusual for...
There hasn't been much movement.
Yeah, I mean, and really, it's not like we had a whole bunch of prices today like we did yesterday that created all the chaos.
I mean, I think what Eric said, you know, you kind of have to, at least the first segment, if you break it down into three segments, you got to pick some winners, you know, as long as you're not odds-on favorites, and then kind of go from there. So you're going to have to, like, play it in segments, three, three, and four, or four. Take the first four races, play who you like, and see where you're at. I don't think you can go in with a set strategy. You're going to see where you land.
It is interesting, and JK, you said you were the same way as both Ralph and Eric. I guess nobody wants to mush themselves by prepping for these final table races.
I mean, it was kind of that. I was also like, I was mentally done. You know what I mean? It's like to be trying to figure out what you're going to do to get to the final, you know, to advance yourself through those races, then to start looking at the next one, you know, you're going to have a little break. So I just said, like, I'll look at them then, you know.
I also think, you know, when you're prepping for Friday and Saturday, you're trying to basically keep up with the crowd. I mean, you don't want somebody else doing more prep. You kind of know that the 10 guys at the final table really might not have done any prep, so you're kind of on the same level, I would think. I mean, I would be shocked if a lot of them actually looked at all, maybe. But I do think right now they're diving in pretty deep.
And the other thing is like, you know, you're playing the 10 races, so you don't have to make that decision. And sometimes you're just doing math anyways. At that point, you're blocking. Who's blocking? They're blocking me. I can't take this horse because he can't get me to whatever your goal is. So a lot of times you're just doing math at the final table anyways. Completely, the game changes significantly.
So interesting. I mean, you know, what kind of advantage, JK, do you think that Ray has because he's been there? I mean, this is second go round. So I mean, he knows. And just
JK looks so skeptical.
No,
as to whether or not
I think he's got the most pressure of anyone up there. He's got a chance to do something no one's done before, and something that I think would be very hard to duplicate, to be a dual winner. Obviously, you know, being, you know, you having one on the wall, and you know how hard it is to get a second one. So I think that's kind of tricky with him. The other thing is Ray's going to take bombs the entire time. He's going to win. He doesn't give a damn about second, third, fourth, fifth. He's going to try to win. Some of these guys will lay up. At no point will Ray lay up.
That's an interesting point.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Ray knows that he's cashed for $50,000 as of now, even if he ends up 10th, and he knows he's not going to end up 10th. He knows he's going to hit something. And so I completely agree. And I really, just knowing him, I mean, he's such a happy-go-lucky right. type guy, and already, I think, feels, you know, like a winner no matter what. I mean, I talked to him this morning. He's just as relaxed as can be. He'll swing.
Right, so the top four... are within $20, top five, of the leader, right?
Well, the dynamic is this. Vail, to me, looking at this, has a commanding $20 lead, and then the other three put them in a bucket.
Right. But is $20 commanding lead?
It's not 10, is it? It's seven or eight.
I don't think that's really, I mean.
It's not, I'm not saying it's over, but I think it's an outsized advantage.
So Vail, if we were lucky enough to get odds, Vail would be the favorite, for sure.
Have to be.
And then Ray would, I mean, I don't know.
Absolutely.
I don't know what kind of favorite he would be, though. I mean.
Yeah, what would a price be? What price would you want to bet the favorite with a $20 lead?
Pete, you know me well enough. No, I don't know the answer to that question. That's Matt. I don't know. You know who I would ask?
If Eric Byler.
I'd go ask Eric.
Don't bother him.
Well, if they put up a number, I'm betting on Eric.
Oh, I mean, 100%. What a story. What a story that this is shaping up. I mean, it already is. I mean, just for him to get this far, very, very happy for him. And there's no shortage of stories here. I'm excited to talk more. We've got an NHC Hall of Famer in Trey Stiles up there. That's an incredible story as well. The action is going to get started here in, what, under an hour, Steve?
In exactly an hour, basically, in 55 minutes or so. We thank the Bay Chicks, which was just entertaining as can be. Dick Girardi is going to join us momentarily, and we got Chris Littlemore that we're looking for. Chris is supposed to sit in with us as well, and I also had promised a Nick Tamaro visit, and I haven't heard back from him, actually, about a visit. So let me suggest, Kay, a call there.
I can run down the final table races for folks who are looking to play along. I'm sure it's right on one of these sheets right here.
More than on the sheets.
We've got our seven races. It's going to start with Gulfstream's ninth listed post time, 1:34 p.m. You can tack on a few minutes to that because it's Gulfstream. Aqueduct's ninth at 1:56 scheduled. Tampa Bay's 10th, 2:18. Oaklawn's 8th at 2:42. And then we come right back with Oaklawn's 9th scheduled for 3:10. Golden Gate 7th at 3:45 p.m. Pacific time. And the race that will determine this year's NHC champion and the player who gets the Horse Player of the Year award, as Chris Littlemore did just a couple of years ago, Santa Anita's 8th race. And now joining us, we have former champion Chris Littlemore. Chris, how are you? Can use that microphone right there. How are you doing, my man?
I'm doing okay.
How you must it must bring back amazing memories of your fantastic run in this event to be in this ballroom. What does it mean to you to be in this fraternity of past NHC champions?
Oh, I love it. I love it here. If like I said before, if I miss this weekend, I feel like I'm missing something extremely important every year. So I look forward to it every year. It's one of my favorite weekends all year long.
Your countryman and fellow champion, former champion Ray Arsenault, is there at the final table. Do you know him well? I mean, from horse playing circles?
Yeah, I know him. I've talked to him a few times. We don't hang together that much, but I know him. I speak to him and talk to him. Yeah.
Are you rooting for him, or is there somebody else, one of your other people at the final table now?
I'm rooting for my fellow Canadian.
It would be something to get a fourth Canadian champion in this thing.
Well, and you had Brian Troop, right? Is also
he was up there,
knocking on the door.
He almost snuck in too. He made a late charge.
Yeah.
So amazing. Listen, no one's gonna question the Great North, the credibility of everybody that enjoys the game and everybody that comes marauding down to Gulfstream and. You know, and even the Quebecers in Hollywood and Dania Beach. I don't know. They might be playing some highlight, but I don't know. But they're down there too. Everybody gets their winter respite in. How did this change your life? Everybody says, oh, you know, the life changing event. Did it change anything?
Well, it changed everything.
Nice.
What I live in now, I now own. I didn't own it before.
Nice.
I was able to help my kids out with their school, my daughter getting a car, all sorts of things. My wife definitely made my wife happy. So, you know, she got her cut, and so So everything's good.
Right? Last year we had talked about getting you on here and elaborating even further than what we had done, you know, in the immediate aftermath, where it's a bit of a buzz and a bit of a blur. And because I know you had some things you wanted to really express, and it didn't really get the full chance when we went back even to the championship. And I know that has kind of sat with you, and I'm thinking about also the Eclipse Award presentation. Anybody that you wanted to thank further, and some of those thoughts, Chris, that seemed to, you know, that seemed to be kind of welling inside you.
Well, all I wanted to really say was to just kind of promote the tour. I think it's a great thing for horse players. But the competitive aspect of it, like trying to beat 700 people in the room, I think is fantastic. I'm a competitive guy, right? It can keep your bankroll a little smaller, which is helpful, and enable you to win a lot. So that ratio is good. You meet all kinds of people. When I come here, I've been here 7 years in a row. I've sat at different tables every time.
Oh, that's great.
I met all kinds of different people.
That's great.
And it's fantastic, right? And everybody's been, like, fantastic to me, and I can't say enough about it.
You won this event in 2018. You qualified that year because of the tour, right? On tour points,
yep.
Am I remembering that right? How did you punch your ticket to this year's NHC?
I managed to get two entries. So I won the online Del Mar tournament.
Oh, very cool.
And I managed to win an entry on horse tourneys. And I wasn't... The second entry kind of just fell on my lap because I was sitting close to... I was up around 16th to 25th in points. So I kept trying to stay there. And I just happened to get another one that got me there. And I think I had two entries twice. So it doesn't matter to me whether I have two or one. I find two could be a little bit challenging for me. So,
hey, you can't knock the success you had only playing one. So it makes sense that you have a little bit of a preference for what got you here. How often are you playing these days? It sounds like you're participating pretty regularly.
Yeah, I play almost every day. I don't play if I don't feed into a tournament. I don't usually buy in. So I try to feed into it, and I'll play maybe. 3 or 4 times a day because I'm retired, so I have the time. Get no hassles from anybody at home, except I monopolize the TV too much. That's about it. But, they support me, and that's what makes it easier and easier to do. And I have all the support from them at home, and it's great.
I remember talking to you 2 years ago and being surprised that your handicapping tools were pretty simple. Daily racing form and a pen. Has that evolved at all, or are you still totally old school?
No. If I could dummy it down even farther, I would do that.
No pen?
Yeah. But, I like to keep it simple. And I look a lot in the post-parade how the horse looks as well. That matters to me. Other than that, I can't complicate it. Too late in life to get into that.
Where did you pick up that skill of being able to look at horses?
I just it's not really a skill. There's not a lot of things I don't know about the horses per se. I just have if I look at my horse and he's focused, like anything in life, I think that he's ready to go. If he's jumping around doing backflips and all that kind of thing, I'm not gonna go with that guy, right? But I just want the horse to look in shape and in focus, look what his job is out there, and I'm okay with that.
Speaking of focus, just looking at the way the Constellation ended up, and Dick Girardi, who's sitting in with us as well, Dick ends up first, you ended up 10th, but look at all the names of the prominent players in the Conso between Dick, David Snyder, who
this year's tour winner,
won the tour, Bob Carlson, Bob Trainer, Danny Chavez, Dave Goodfriend,
Brad Anderson, BCBC winner,
Randy Gallo,
a legend,
Chris Williams, and Chris Littlemore. So, I mean, that's about as glittery a console leaderboard as you're going to see.
I would have traded places with Brad at the Breeders' Cup.
That's right, of course.
I let him win this.
Dick went very close, crushing the Breeders' Cup mile.
Turf.
The turf, yeah. And just getting done by Brad Anderson's bold $25,000 win bet on Vino Rosso.
This contest is much easier to hold a lead than the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, it is.
I was happy to be in front going down a stretch of this contest. Nobody's getting you for like $50,000 on the last race here.
We got another former NHC champion, actually still technically the reigning NHC champion for another couple of hours. We've got the reigning NHC champion here in Scott Coles. Is that mic on, Steve? Does he have number 5?
Yes, he does.
There it is, Mike.
There we go.
On mic number 5, Scott Coles, reigning NHC champion. You made a bit of a run on the second day here. How's your experience been?
Well, I'm sitting here with you, so not
not as good. That's not what you were hoping for.
Yeah. I did make a run. Unfortunately, it was on the wrong entries. I made the run on the entry. I started with $34. I mean, you know what type of day it turned into. So by the time I thought I was comfortable, I played a bunch of short prices, and then four cappers hit in the last hour and a half.
It was a little crazy.
I dropped from 45th to 159th pretty quickly.
It's tough.
And then I was trying to figure out what price I could play without being blocked by like 60 people in front of me. So it was like a
gets very tricky.
Yeah,
now we're radio here, so we have to describe it. You are not wearing your famous Cubs hat. You have the gray Cubs hat on. Do you regret the decision to not go with your signature hat that you won the championship with? How much of this can we simply put down to a wardrobe failure?
I came in the outfit I wanted in yesterday.
Okay.
I didn't even wear the Stats Racing gear. I came in, I took it all off. The only thing I didn't bring was the shoes, and that could have been it. I don't know. But, yeah. And I got my TRF pin on, and so I've been trying to represent the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation all weekend and help them out. I don't think Kim ended up making it here, but she's been great, and gonna hope to do some more work with them and promote them a little bit this year. So
fantastic.
Ask the same question we talked to Chris about a year later. How, you know, what's different? What, you know, what coming here this year? What do you feel that was? Yeah, it was a new experience from last year.
Yeah, I'm engaged.
Hey, congratulations.
Awesome. Yeah. There's Courtney right there. Yeah, so that was the biggest change, obviously.
That's
and,
awesome.
No law school loans is the other big change. That was nice. Lucky for her, she doesn't get to inherit them with our marriage. But yeah, other than that, it was just so many cool things, like sitting here with you guys and just everywhere I went. I mean, it was just great treatment. It was a really cool victory tour, and everybody was really, really great and welcoming at all the different places I got to go and all the things I got to do. So it was awesome. It was just an awesome year all the way around.
What's next for you tournament-wise, Scott? Any particular events you have circled that you know you want to participate in?
Well, I mean, I hope to do that Hawthorne Invitational again that they put on NBC Sports last year. But, I mean, I can understand after my performance this year if they drop me. And we'll see. I had a chance in that one last year, so I'll hit and scroll it. So hopefully they only watched the early part of the footage, and I was doing pretty well. So.
Well, you definitely won't be dropped from our lineup over in podcast terms. You've done a fantastic job helping us out and doing some handicapping, and we look forward to keeping you very much in the fold as you go on this quest. And it could be, you know, I was going to say this, the quest to become the second or the first two-time NHC champion, but Ray Arsenault
may
be.
Yeah, he's up there. He's got first chance. Yeah, he's there.
You two might have to cede that to him.
That's a great point.
I expected to see Chris at the final table for the third straight year, but I didn't know. But, yeah, it's awesome to see him up there. And Trey Styles, I've always loved Trey. I got to hang out with Trey and Natty Logan this year, and he's such a good guy. So it'd be cool to see him win. And who else up there? Eric Bilek, I met him yesterday. That's pretty cool. I don't think I really know anybody else up there, so I guess those are my three that I'm rooting for.
Those are your roots. That's right. You made a great point. I had forgotten, Chris, that you have two final table appearances on your resume. How much of an advantage, and this I'm stealing a Steve question from earlier, do you think it's an edge for Ray, the fact that he's been through this whole thing before?
Oh, yeah, big time. It's like he... I found it when I came here this year,
I wasn't nervous at all, right? You have more confidence, and I know exactly what to expect, and I just come in and play my game and see if it works, right? It's a fun weekend, and I love to be here, and that's the best thing. Like, I love Vegas. Some people don't like Vegas. I love it, right? So I'm up. I feel good off the hop. So that's all a mindset for me. If I get off a little bit on what I'm doing, the day could go south in a hurry. But I try not to do that.
Well, it was an admirable run in the consolation for you, Chris. Your resume gets better and better still. And Scott, very much looking forward to seeing what comes next for you, whether it's at Hawthorne or if we can get you around to some of these other big tournaments. Keeneland would be fun to see you at. And
hoping to get there this year. Yeah.
Monmouth, pick your prize. It's great. Do you, Chris, travel to many of the tournaments?
I had the last few years when I won there. I hadn't seen any tracks in the States. And now I've managed to go to almost all of them that I wanted to see.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And that's
very cool.
On a bucket list, that was, I always wanted to do that, and I got to do it. So from coast to coast, Santa Anita, Del Mar, right over to Keeneland, Monmouth, Churchill Downs.
The victory tours sound like an underrated part of the experience. Do you think that's fair to say?
It is. Sometimes it's tough to play tournaments on the victory tour because you're always... you're asked to do a lot of different things while you're there and talk to a lot of different people, which I think is important because I think we need to promote the good parts of this game instead of just always being under fire. So I thought it was really important to do those things, but it's harder to play tournaments on those days just because can you do this at this time and this at this time? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, but it's hard to buy in a tournament and put your focus on it too. But the victory tour is unbelievable because they give you just first-class treatment in most of the places. So, I thought it was pretty awesome.
A lot of these contest tracks, they do the best job of anybody taking care of horse players. And we go back to Santa Anita, to Keeneland, and to Monmouth especially.
Guys, we appreciate it. I want to get a couple minutes in with Dick as well. Chris Littlemore, Scott Coles.
Thanks,
outstanding.
Guys.
Awesome.
Well done.
Thanks.
Chris, 1,500, right? 1,500?
Yeah, I'll take that.
There you go. Dick, 10,000 for you. Yeah,
congrats. That works.
You're happy with 10,000?
You're the man.
Not today.
Doesn't matter. You beat the game here.
Good stuff, buddy. We'll catch you later. You hanging around for a bit?
Scott Coles, everybody, and Chris Littlemore, champions two of the last 3 years. Congrats, Mazel Tov, Courtney and Scott, to get married. We didn't get, when's the date?
That's a life-changing year right there.
What night? What's
that? Win the NHC, get engaged. Come on.
Love it. Dick, a couple of thoughts
yes, sir.
While we've got you. And, how many of these have you participated in?
This is it.
This is the first?
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But you've been in contests for so long.
Yeah, right? I never... was really trying to get into this. I got into it kind of by chance. I was trying to get into the BCBC, and I kept just missing. And the consolation prizes, as it turned out, was a shot at this. I finished, I want to say, second or third at Laurel when the top two got in the Breeders' Cup, but I got an NHC spot. And then I was in an express bet thing at Santa Anita where the top five got in, and I finished sixth. So they got me two spots, and then I finally qualified for the Breeders' Cup on the last race of the last possible contest, and that worked out pretty well. But, yeah, typically I have not tried to go for this contest, but having come out here, it's a fun experience. I know Marshall and I were talking about it, but it's like a horse players convention.
For sure.
Exactly. It's a good thing. I'm not a $2 win and place guy. I'm more of a live money guy. That's how I play, but... I learned after the first 2 days a better strategy of how to play this, employed it today, and got very, very fortunate.
How would you characterize the change that you made if you
I did not look at any past performances. I was strictly playing prices today.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, the first 2 days I was holed up and doing all the work that you would normally do. And then what convinced me was all those crazy horses at the end of Saturday.
It was wild.
It just completely changed the whole contest. And I said, well, and I was also, frankly, too tired to look at anything anymore.
Yeah, of course. It's mentally very taxing.
And I was fortunate that all three prices I hit were on the same entry. And I had two of them. I had zero on one entry and 103 or whatever on the other.
Some randomness went into that, if you're being honest, it sounds like.
This would not be, I would not take a lot of credit for this. I will gladly take the money, but we'll not take a lot of credit.
Dick, passing on the bragging rights.
While we've got you, you and I talked the other night when we're staying on the same floor at Bally's, and I had Senator Tommy Tomlinson immediate reaction to Governor Wolf's attack on potentially on the Development Fund Trust. Your thoughts about where this stands, and I know you talked to former Governor Rendell, who still plays a very important role in Pennsylvania politics, not to mention in Eagle rooting fandom scenarios. But what's your thoughts on where things are?
No, it came out of the blue, Steve. Nobody knew that the governor was about to announce what he announced on Tuesday till maybe 3 days prior. And so everybody in the business was really kind of taken aback, like, where did this come from? Because just 3 years before, Governor Wolf had signed into law what looked like protection forever for the business, so people could invest. And if you bought a farm, you knew you were going to have the same thing. So nobody knows quite where this came from. But now, having talked to people around the legislature, I don't get a sense there's a lot of support for this. I know you had Tommy Tomlinson on. Bruce Casella and Keith Jones and I are going to have Tommy on our TV show, which is in the Philadelphia market next week, to talk about it. So my suspicion is that this was Governor Wolf at his budget address and taking 80% of the development fund. And I don't know what ultimately is going to come out of the fund, if anything, but it's not going to be anything close to 80%. But how it's all going to shake out, I'd be guessing. But I don't see, given all the, I know there was a huge thing up in Anvil today at the farm where Smarty Jones stands, like 200-300 people were up there. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's such a big business in the state with the farms. And think about the guys that grow mushrooms. They're all gasping, and I won't explain. You know where they go. You know what that's all about. We won't get into that on your show, even though I know we could probably say things.
Yes, you can.
But there's just so many offshoots to it that, again, I'm not sure. And Governor Wolf's a good guy, and I think he's been a good governor. Where this came from, I don't know. The problem is, for horse racing, nobody's going to be against scholarships for people at state-supported universities. We all get that. But Governor Rendell told me there's a lot of money for that. It shouldn't all come out of the Horse Racing Development Fund. And I think that's going to be the argument. That's going to be the discussion. And we'll see how it plays. Look, for my friends that are owners and trainers and people that fully depend on this, I mean, I don't want to see this happen. I mean, I know too many people whose livelihoods are at stake.
There is, of course, the alternate dialogue or critique that Pennsylvania has not done enough with the opportunity that they've had. And in particular, there's plenty of reasonable ammunition to indict Greenwood on this topic. A usurious takeout structure that has been just insane, and to Joe Wilson's credit, finally relented and cut numbers to a more reasonable level.
Right.
But considering the revenue and the, you know, the support, the TIF that was coming their way, it never made any sense for it to be so high. And despite people screaming, it just fed in. Then there's this jockey situation from, you know, leading into the weekend. They ended up settling with the jocks, and I haven't talked to Tony Black yet about what concessions were made and where the, you know, where the settlement elements when the ink dried. But there's this ongoing perception that they don't really care about the racing. They're only interested in the big building across the parking lot, the casino. There's other Wild West mentality concerns about, you know, some of the things that are either reasonable and some unreasonable, attacks on Penn National and the racing there and the atmosphere there. as well as in Philly. How do they counter that? Because the breeding thing is going very well. There's
yes.
no question it's working.
No doubt.
And there's been all kinds of progress.
No, it's a legitimate question. It's a very legitimate criticism. The reality in our state is once the racetrack owners got casinos, that's where their focus was, because that's where the money is, and everybody understands that. But there's a happy medium, and I don't think that's been reached, and I think it needs to be reached, because they could have done more for horse racing. But I don't know let's say specifically like a guy like Joe Wilson. I don't know what his instructions are from above him. I don't know what the people that he works for are telling him about how much you can spend at the racetrack. I'd love to know the answer. I don't know. But, yes, in Pennsylvania, they have not done enough for horse racing to make the handle go up, to give the players a better deal, all those things that should have been doing and that I wrote about for years, you've obviously talked about. So, Steve, you're right. It's a legitimate criticism, and I think they need to change it.
I appreciate the frank response, and watching a nice tight finish at Aqueduct. We're looking up at the timing. We're about half an hour away from the first of the races that'll comprise the final table. The field of 10 are established.
What was the winning number at Aqueduct? I'm live into pick six.
Oh, yeah. It was Tribeca that I know. I can tell you it was Tribeca. That I know. The two horse.
That's fine. Still alive.
Attaboy. 5-1, too. 5-1. 5-1. That was
so
a horse.
We got a 10-1, a 7-1, a 3-1, and what'd you say that was?
5-1. And Tribeca, I know very well.
This might be better than the Consolation.
My man, it might be. Siaka bought Tribeca for $10,000 for the for the Hennings.
Hello.
for Coach Dan Henning and his brother Michael.
Yeah,
wow. Great run.
Yeah, I wasn't hearing you that well, but I think the bottom line on Pennsylvania is it's one of the states that the law was perfectly written for horse racing. I mean, you couldn't have asked for any more. They got a tremendous deal. And yes, the fact is the racetracks in horse racing, and the Pennsylvania Derby's become a big deal. That's part of it. That day is great. September's great. But yeah, year round, there needs to be more attention paid to specifically the players. I mean, the idea that the takeout was what it was. And I mean, again, I wrote about it so many times, I got tired of writing about it, but it was silly. And I'm glad that Joe has relented a little bit. But again, I don't know where the criticism lies, because I just don't know who's telling him, all right, here's your bottom line, don't spend any more than this. Those are all unanswerable questions, because you're dealing with a private corporation and you can't get answers.
Well, and in addition, the nasty comment, let's bet on children rather than horses. Ugh, I mean, who's right. writing that?
Gross.
And
yeah.
I mean, and frankly, it's such an affront to the farmers and to the breeders, the people that are creating the horses, and for those that have never driven the Penn Turnpike from New Jersey to West Virginia and Ohio, it's a pretty agriculturally based state.
As James Carville said many years ago, Pennsylvania between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh is Alabama. That's just the reality of it. It's a very rural state in between the two big cities on either case, farms everywhere. So it's horse. It is horse country. Chester County is like Lexington. I mean, some of the great horse farms in the country are down there.
It's standard bred.
Strawbridge and the Jacksons with Barbara. Yep. I mean, you drive through there and you swear you're in Kentucky. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, yeah, to your point about what the governor said, it was a very political statement clearly written for him by somebody. We'd rather make a bet on the kids than horse owners, as if every horse owner is an Arab sheikh and every horse owner is making lots of money.
The worst.
As we all know, 90% approximately of horse owners lose money. It's a losing proposition that most of the people are in it because they love the game. And by being in the game, the owners are supporting all these other people. And the governor has to know that. He's a smart, he's not stupid, but it was just silly. It was just oversimplifying. And how many stories have we read over the years oversimplifying what horse racing is, what it does? And unfortunately, the argument has not been made well enough. I mean, Pete, you did a great job with your thing when we were having problems with the breakdowns. People just don't get it because they want life simple. Life is not simple. It's complex.
That's right.
Well, and this is the most complex sporting endeavor there is.
Unquestionably. Now, I tell people about it. That when I take people to the track for the first time, they're amazed at what it is they see. They said, really, this is going on? And I said, then this isn't even like even a half of what actually happens. All the behind-the-scenes stuff, the people that are making their livelihood through this. I mean, the fact, if they somehow took all that money away in Pennsylvania, the game would just go away. And I would survive, but for some of these other people that have been dependent on this game for decades, they're just, and all of a sudden your tax base is going to diminish. Again, all stuff you guys know all
so
about.
So many hardworking people, so many jobs, such a contribution to the overall economy that gets washed away in reductive propagandist crap.
Now, it is crazy.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
But the sport is vulnerable, Steve, and that was your point. In any state where purses are dependent, in Pennsylvania, almost not solely, but to the large part, on slot machine revenue, so it's always vulnerable to a governor or legislators or whoever, whatever the mood of the day is. If they, what do they need money for? They got to build bridges. They got. I mean, it's a problem. It's just a reality.
Well, and there's also an internal issue that becomes problematic within the infrastructure of the sport. Because an argument could be made as we watch and see the situation facing Arlington. The argument could be made that if there wasn't alternative gaming monies in Indiana and in Iowa and now Ohio, Illinois wouldn't necessarily be in the position, you know, desperate for horses. Now, that isn't to say that Indiana and Ohio don't have a right to enhance their programs, because they both are also agricultural states that have viable breeding programs and racing histories. I mean, Ohio is also the Kentucky of standardbred racing. I mean, the fair circuit in Ohio is, I mean, go to a little brown jug and you'll see what the mania there.
And that's what people forget about the Pennsylvania law. It was signed into law in July of 2004 for the express reason you're talking about, Steve. West Virginia had slots and alternative gambling, and so did Delaware. Pennsylvania racing was dying. The bill was actually introduced for horse racing. It wasn't introduced for giant casinos, but the casino companies obviously came in. It's interesting how nobody ever says, why don't we cut a little bit from the casinos? You ever heard that argument?
Well, because the casinos...
You think they're making enough money?
Well, the casinos have become...
They got juice.
Yeah, they've become the politically influential entity that racing was for the prior century and a half.
Correct.
I don't think we have to, you know, automatically relinquish that position. And I love the subsidy comments, and I use the word TIF because it's a tribute to the entity that made the alternative gaming possible.
Correct.
There's no casinos without racing's
not,
century
not in
and
Pennsylvania.
A half.
That's
without
exactly
Smarty that. Jones.
No, it was specifically Smarty Jones. People just don't know that because 15 years is forever. They forget how this started. And the reality is, without the casinos in Pennsylvania, the handle would be dramatically bigger. Would it be big enough to support the purses that they're now? No, but it would not be what it is. That was the whole idea. They knew the handle would come down when you put a casino in the parking lot with your racetrack. That was the whole idea behind giving the racetracks some of the money.
Dick Girardi with us from the Philadelphia Daily News. And are you writing at all for DRF? Every so often it would pop up.
As Irwin Cohen calls it, I do some ad hoc stories when needed. Like if Andy has some figure issue, I will get a call from Irwin on one end and Andy on the other. All right, guys, I got it. But yeah, I used to have a regular column, but like the rest of the world, they cut back. I retired full time from the paper 2 years ago, but I do like 40, 50 stories for them a year. So I'm still in action, and I do a thing for the PTHA website at Parks once a week. So you can get me on letsgoracingparks.com. I'll probably be writing about the Pennsylvania situation maybe even this week, Steve.
Very good.
It's rather topical.
Well, you show up in the DRF, and Andy shows up on At the Races when Andy wants to explain a figure
that's
issue.
I'm the conduit for explaining why the boys did what they did.
Exactly right. And here's a fast finish. I think this is a horse that Robbie Medina Well, it's going to be Shadwell, but Robbie Medina has been saddling. Suge is letting
Have we started the final table yet?
Not yet.
So that race was not in the contest.
No.
That's just horse players being horse players. That's
okay.
They're assembling.
They're going to assemble.
They're assembling the final table
as we speak.
Yes, I can see them over there. Pictures being taken.
Yeah, this is definitely a contest I would like to be in the lead. At this point, definitely be in front.
Let me get Alex Waldrop in. They're going to introduce and bring everybody up one at a time, and an opportunity to say hello to Alex Waldrop from the NCRA. Alex,
hey Steve,
here we are again.
Yep,
excited. Dick, thanks so much. Dick Girardi, everybody, and Alex. A bigger venue and a terrific lineup. Everybody thrilled with the way this whole thing has worked out. The move to Bally's, back to Bally's.
Yeah, it was, you know, we didn't have to do this. We could have stayed at TI and sort of limped along with the event. And, you know, there was some risk associated with it. We didn't know what the venue would look like. There are lots of moving parts to this whole event, but it's worked out well. I have to say, it's paid off in every way.
And you've had just nothing but positives, I imagine.
We have. I mean, there was a lot of work to be done getting to this point. The weeks leading up, we had a lot of, you know, it was a learning curve. We had to explain to Caesars and the Bally's what this event looks like. There were insurance issues, a variety of other issues. We had to get worked out. We did, and we couldn't be happier.
Well, and it feels like everybody, I think everybody has stayed for the most part, right?
It's a great crowd here in the ballroom, I think. People are very excited, especially after last year's final table. All that movement on the leaderboard, a lot of excitement, good racing going on around the country, and I'm impressed with the energy in the room here. Is it a multi-year deal with Bally's, Alex?
2 years, at least.
Okay, excellent. So we will be back here
next year. Yes, we
will. That's exciting. I've heard nothing but positives from the players about the venue and the energy in the room.
Alex, it's always in February a busy period for NTRA coming off the Eclipse Awards. Obviously, you were in Washington for the subcommittee hearings. Mm-hmm. A lot of moving parts on that subject. Work underway to create an alternate bill. Talk about where that stands in terms of counteracting some of the. Yes, and it all comes down to LASIX yet again, but some thoughts.
Well, let me say this. We at the NTRA have been working on consensus legislation for years. And we've tried to bring people together around something like the Horse Racing Integrity Act, and we haven't really made much progress. I think people are getting more serious about it. I cannot go into any of the details. I will say that we at the NTRA continue to push ahead, to spend dollars, to hire law firms, to try our best to find common ground, because we do think there's an opportunity. But I couldn't really talk much about what it looked like, and I'd be. We're at a sensitive time in the negotiations now, and I'm going to have to demur on that point and just say that we're looking for ways to make this work.
Overall, after just a year of unprecedented tumult and consternation and a media being in a defensive position with an onslaught of critiques, it does feel like a few months into this year, there is a more of a calm and more of a sense of you know, getting back to normal and operating the game as everyone likes, but at the same time with this increased safety and concern that doing as much as possible. I think we as an industry felt and feel that we were doing what we could, but doing a better job explaining those efforts to a seemingly more interested public, I suppose, is kind of the watchword going forward in 2020.
Well, what we can't do is let ourselves sort of relax and go back into a sort of a business as usual mode. I don't think that's going to happen. as you say, that was a tough year. So we've got work to do. We have work to do, and we can't let the success that we're having keep us from continuing to make progress. And that is often what happens in our business. We have these ebbs and flows. We do well. We see fatalities come down. We see people being more diligent, and then we lose focus. We take our eye off the ball shortly. Things spike. We're right back where we were. Or there's a high-profile situation, which is always difficult for us as a business. So we have to stay. We have to remain vigilant. We have to keep working. The NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance continues to modify its code of standards. We've got a lot of work to do there, and we're doing that work. Even as early as tomorrow, we're going to be updating that code. Work's being done there. So a lot of work is going on, lots of interest in making sure that we've got it, that we're making progress. We're not losing sight of the goal here.
I also sense that after a period of the industry and segments of the industry finding fault with everything the organization tried to do and finding fault with the very presence of the association, that the pendulum has kind of swung back in the other direction, and that the industry and some of those elements have come kind of back into the fold to give NTRA more of a consensus and more clout, a position that, you know, that you really need to operate and to be a leader. I mean, everybody says, oh, we have a leadership vacuum. No, we don't have a leadership vacuum. We have a coalition vacuum.
Yeah, I call it a followership vacuum. We got too many leaders. We got so many leaders.
That's good.
We're going in multiple directions.
That's good.
We need more people to follow, fewer leaders, and we'll get some. Now, I think our board of directors at the NTRA is as strong, as diverse as it's been in my tenure, and we're pleased with that. You know, we have a lot. Our mission is comprehensive. We do a lot of things. We focus not only on safety and integrity. We do focus on the customer. This event right here is intended to be a celebration of the horse player. We can't lose focus. Can't lose sight of that as well. We can't let the safety initiative kind of drain energy from every other program. So, yeah, I'm proud about the way we're working today. We're actually a broader board, but our due structure is as low as it's ever been. We're now, our dues is almost maybe 15% of what it was when I started 13, 14 years ago. We've reduced dues by almost 90%, and yet we're still doing a lot of the same programs because we have, you know, a program has to prove itself. It has to carry its own weight. We can't afford. We don't have dues money to use to do things that aren't considered valuable by the industry. If they're valuable, we do them because they'll pay for themselves, and that's where we focus.
Other than the topics that kind of jumped up and need to be dealt with immediately, what are some long-term, intermediate and long-term goals that you're working on that maybe haven't received all that much publicity?
Well, there's no question we have to even in the medium term and certainly the long term, the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance has to evolve. It has to have more authority. There have to be real consequences for tracks that don't get on board. So that's an ongoing process. We're going to see the alliance take on a new role, maybe even new governance, a new governance structure, because we need to get serious, and maybe it grows beyond the NTRA. It's, you know, it's our baby, but, you know, we want to see this thing grow to maturity, and however that happens. So we're really focused on maturing the Safety and Integrity Alliance. I think long term, this event, the NHC, the National Horse Players Championship, we want to see it grow and prosper. We want to see it get larger, so that we can, in many ways, regionalize the contest. Maybe have more than, you know, maybe have some super qualifiers around the country that feed into this event. So we've got lots of looking at that. our Advantage program. We just added Big Ass Fans, which is that's an incredible partner. It really is. It's one of those that lots of tracks and certainly a lot of horse farms are using those fans. So we're cool. We're really happy to have them as a new partner. That's top priority for us to have that done. And then in the legislative field, you know, that's a constant offense, defense. So we've always got tax issues that we have to pursue. We've got to go back and get 3-year depreciation for racehorses renewed for next year. And we've got sports betting that's going to rear its head, I believe, sometime in the next 18 months. We've got to be prepared for that to see. I think the industry has prevailed in most cases at the state level, and I'm not sure that there's a lot of need for any federal legislation at this point in time. So I don't think,
despite what Orrin Hatch thinks.
Yeah, I don't see that. We're just going to be watching that, but I don't see that changing in any way. I mean, look at what Monmouth Park has been able to do. It's incredible. You know, it's Dennis Drazen once again.
He's out of control. There's a new idea every 30 there. Minutes. There's some everywhere. Other wacky concept.
And is they're going to come out with fixed odds betting.
Yeah,
shortly. That's going to be interesting. Be exciting to see how that works.
I see Fravel on the track
he is.
At Santa Anita.
Oh, he's working today.
Well, as Richard Mandela had said when I talked to him at some point, asking him about Fravel, he said he'll be better when he's gelded. That was my wife. And then Richard laughed at his own joke. I love it. That's actually a pretty good group, it looks like, in that race. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough. And
you too, Steve.
Always thank a you. Treat to be here. No, I love coming, and we conceived of this, I don't know what, 5 years ago, and next thing you knew, it's a tradition. So many people just live vicariously through it. It's brought, I think, a lot of people into the contest arena. So putting on the show, what you guys between Keith and Michelle Ray McCraft and Holly Short and all the staff, and then the support team that is a little bit more anonymous, just tremendous. Well done. Thank you.
Well, we love it. It's hard work. It's in the early days, it sometimes was a thankless task, but we think it's doing great things, and we're going to keep working.
Alex Waldrop, everybody, and the NTRA, and always a pleasure to get a chance to catch up with Alex and get a update on everything that's going on. And he takes on the tough questions with a cheery outlook, and he knows that he gets kind of attacked in a lot of quarters, and it doesn't affect him. He drives forward without hesitation. And Roger Satina also drives through without hesitation, and he joins us. Roger,
I'm shot.
Honest though,
this is exhausting.
Well, you had that big cash hit yesterday you told us about.
I had two, actually, because I had Brendan Walsh's horse pretty good, too.
Now, you told me the other day when I interviewed you for the pregame show that you wanted to sit as far away from the windows as possible, and you never do well at the NHC when you bet cash. What caused you to change your mind there?
So the funny thing is I made two cash bets yesterday on the Walsh horse, the 11 that won, and then that horse at 10, because I liked them so much and the price was so good that I could not just not bet them.
Yeah,
I had to be out of my mind. And good thing I did, because I'm going to go home with a smile on my face, because I did.
Where did it? You made a big run yesterday. What did you?
Friday, Friday was just a train wreck.
Gotcha.
It was just bad. You know, I really gravitate towards grass racing. There wasn't much to be found.
No.
That would have been
tough. I'm not a big off track, the sealed track type thing that Oakland had. I just couldn't get anything. The problem is I always say I'm going to grind a little, and, like, I just can't do it. I just can't bet short prices. I just can't do it. So
tonight you'll be inducted into the NHC Hall of Fame. What does this honor mean to you, Roger?
It's pretty exciting, actually. I'm really pretty excited about it. You know, to get recognized like that, it's great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you have anything prepared? I imagine you'll be asked to say a few
words. No, Keith said to keep it short, so I'm going to keep it short.
You'll be giving, odds are you'll be giving a speech at the same time as Brad Pitt at the Oscars. So.
Yeah, oh, is that true? Yeah. That's funny.
I'd rather listen to you. No offense.
But how about Ray Arsenal, huh? Like,
amazing. What a story.
It's totally amazing.
What a story.
Cool as a cucumber.
And another guy who not afraid of the long end of the odds spectrum,
no.
Like you. He'll be up there, and he'll be playing who he likes, and who he likes,
yeah,
will be big prices.
And Brian Troop almost made the cut, too.
We talked about that. Absolutely.
It's like, you know, another one that deserves a lot of recognition. It was pretty amazing.
Who at the final table? Who else at the final table do you know? There's a lot of names that are not super familiar. Here's the list if you want to see in front of me. Now, obviously, Trey Styles,
him I know, yeah. That's
Eric
really
Biley,
it.
We've been talking about. We've had the chance
and
to talk
Ray,
to
him. I really don't know anybody else. Chris Podretz, I know who that is.
Yeah, he plays in a lot of contests. A very nice man.
Yeah, I don't know anybody else. John Vail's actually from New Jersey. I'd probably know him if I saw his face.
Right, right. I'll, you know, I have a picture of him here. I'll show that to you. Yeah, I think he's from Lyndhurst. Maybe?
I think they said Lyndhurst, yeah.
Where's that relative to you?
That's right. It's actually right near where the football stadium is.
That's John.
Yeah, I've probably seen him at Monmouth before. I'm sure he's a regular also.
It seems like a safe bet. And what a position to be in, going to that final table with the $20 lead. How big of an edge do you think it is?
It's always better to be on top.
But
so,
in terms of if you were betting on one of these players to take it all, where would you?
I would bet on Ray.
Nice.
I would absolutely bet on Ray.
Love it.
Well, let's set the stage for this first of seven. Gulfstream ninth, and there was a scratch. The one captured the genie. The Cassie Barber ended up scratching. So we start off with a field of seven. And your favorite, let's be honest, Larry Pilotti, a 2-1 number on the three. You've got 7-2, and actually now Sweet Mia on the outside, Kathleen O'Connell, and Arad Ortiz, 5-2. 7-2 on Leilali, Cheryl Weinbaugh, with the red hot riding Marcos Meneses. And then three horses at 6-1. How about that?
Really wide open.
Very strange board. A 2-1, a 5-2, and a 7-2, and three horses at 6-1.
When you were at the final table, how much work had you done beforehand?
That's a good question. I did 4 minutes most of it. You know, when you get into the Sunday, there's, instead of having eight tracks, like 80 races, it's more like half of that.
Yeah,
so
28, was
yeah,
it 28 this
today,
morning?
Today it was 28. It was probably the same a few years back, so. Yeah, I basically did them all.
Oh, that's interesting. I'm going to take a wild guess. You didn't get a chance to look at this race yet.
I did not look at anything this afternoon. I looked early, and then I ran out of gas and went back to bed. Just couldn't do it anymore.
You do have a speech to give tonight. So
exactly.
It is understandable that you got to keep the mental powder dry at least a little bit.
Absolutely.
Well, and just kind of thumbing through here quickly from a fig standpoint, and field is not separated by much if you're a fig player. Leilali and Let's Be Honest, actually. Looking at this, Leilali and Let's Be Honest seem like they've got a little bit of a fig edge on the rest of this group. Sweet Mia was a first-out winner for Kathleen O'Connell, but has got to get faster. You got a first-time you've got a trainer. You got a trainer move, it looked like. Now I don't. Was there a trainer switch?
On Sweet Mia?
No, on Grand Reserva. Interesting. Okay, there's a note. No, that's interesting. There's a note on
that.
No, there's no change. That's very weird. Grand Reserva at 7-1. That race, two back in the Hut-Hut, I mean, was obviously beaten and beaten, you know, by a poll by Tonal Shape, who went on to win the stake last week.
I mean, Tonal Shape's a really good 3-year-old. So.
This is Philly Jean King, the Arundel filly.
Great name.
I tell you what, she's at 7-1. If you wanted to spin the wheel here and reach for a price, that isn't a bad spot to land. And of course, what they'll do with
Oh, look at this. By my standards, just won at the fairgrounds.
Oh, very cool.
How about that for Brett Calhoun and Allied Racing? By my standards back. And we were kind of wondering where he was. Interesting. Looking back up at Gulfstream, they're moving toward, this is the stake in New York, by the way. Here's the Biagio's Rose. Let's take this.
Julie Minty goes to the lead, held accountable to her outside in second. More Mischief, Manny Franco, a snug hold of her in third. No Hand, No Game between Tenerella's Our Supernova. Now, inside of Our Supernova, that's Mrs. Orr. The trailer is a special shot out of the chute and onto the oval. Through an opening quarter of 23-4, newly minted, just a half length in front of a pressing, held accountable, No Hang, No Gain, moves up between those two. Outside, it's More Mischief as Mrs. Orr and her four-race win streak ride the rails into third. Our Supernova rushes up as well. The trailer is still Espresso Shot, 46-4. The half-mile time, No Hang, No Gain, has put her head in front of newly minted as the field makes their way past the three-inch pole. More Mischief swings into action on the outside. Espresso Shot's in with a chance as well. Our Supernova behind the wall of horses as the field turns to home.
Well, there's a 3-5 favorite that a lot of people undoubtedly leaned on in that Empire 6 force out. And $2.5 million, by the way, bet in. A mammoth.
Wow,
it was a mammoth number. Yeah. I thought it might get to, you know, usually the number is 3.5-4 times the pot. So I thought maybe $1.25 million, maybe $1.5 million, but they blew past that. So that is going to knock some people out, undoubtedly, of the Empire 6.
This thing's going to pay huge. It's definitely a tricky sequence. Ryan Flanders walking around with a bottle of Willet. Is this the rye or the bourbon?
Dude,
can I drink some of it?
That's for you.
I'll tell you in a minute. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'll be here all week.
A former final table. He was in the whatever the first final table was, which I guess was, as I think about it, was the Jose Arias year, and Ryan made the final table there. Has appeared at this event periodically. Another guy who's more of a live bank player, but anybody who comes and brings free whiskey is okay in my book. This will be good for what ails me.
That was a pretty bottle, too.
Yeah, they do it in the shape of the still. They're making some good stuff. They're making some good stuff at Willett.
They're making their way slowly to the gate. Let's run down the odds in this first of the final table races. And you're looking at 5-1 right now on Leilally, the now 2, the Cheryl Winebaugh. Let's be honest, the 3, 2-1 favorite right now. 6-1 on Mandamus from George Navarro, second time Navarro. 20-1 on Takes 2 to Wiggle. This is Steve Badu. And Philly Jean King, we talked about, 8-1. Make it 9-1 now, the 6, the Juan Alvarado trainee, and Grand Reserva 5-2, the Victor Barboza coming out of the My Dear Girl, and Sweet Mia on the outside 7-2. So the favorites are 2-1, 5-2, 7-2, and those numbers are now 5-1, 6-1, and 10-1 on the alternatives, as well as one big price, the 22-1 shot, Take It to Wiggle.
Only one capper, and that's that Takes 2 to Wiggle. I will predict that at least one player in the field will have that one, looking to shake things up, giving themselves a shot at that $800,000 first prize. Wouldn't surprise me if Ray Arsenault ends up landing on the 5. That's his kind of price.
That's true. Ray's not afraid. Ray's not afraid to fire away, right?
How should we do the reveal when they show the picks? Should we run them down over the call
we usually
and then go
do.
To the call? Is
we,
that the best way to do
yeah,
it?
Yeah, we usually do it. That's our tradition.
I'll look on Twitter, too, and see if anybody at the NTRA is going to be putting them in real time, and then I can retweet as well if that's easier for folks to follow along.
Coming up to the first of the final table races. And no race goes off slower and more arduously than they do at Gulfstream.
They're milling around. Yeah, it's not fun. They're milling around up there on the final table just to set that scene. There's sort of, it looks like a scoreboard in a hockey arena with the sponsors' names on it above the final table area. They're up on a podium. You can see it's surrounded by sort of narrow tables with the cash that they're playing for sitting right there.
And Ray's up there counting the fake money. You see that? Ray picked the money up and he was flicking through the stack to make sure there was $5,000 in that stack.
That's amazing. Who else do I recognize? I see Eric Bielik over there at the side. I don't know. I guess I know about half of the players at the final table. Oh, that's kind of cool. They have a video screen. They're cycling through.
Yeah.
Which is kind of neat. I see Trey Stiles up there, NHC Hall of Famer like Roger Satina, sitting here with us. What this would mean to him, I mean, to be here 18 times and to bring it to the brink. Chris Podratz, who I've had the pleasure of hanging out with at the Eddie Logan Suite at Santa Anita. His cousin, Ken McMahon, big contest player as well. There's Eric Bielik with his handlebar mustache up on the screen, representing the younger generation of horse players. This is going to be fun. I'm hoping we get a final table a little bit more like we had last year with all that crazy movement. The first couple of years, people were wondering, is anybody ever going to come from far back to claim the big prize? Scott Coles showed that it could be done. Started the final table in ninth position, got all the way up to the top, just absolutely caught fire at the final table. Who will catch fire here in the quest for the $800,000 top prize and the title of Horse Player of the Year?
No appreciable changes really on the price except for the long shot that is now up to 24-1. Favorite now 9-5. Let's Be Honest. Larry Pilates trainee, who's actually built up a decent record. We're going to send him in. We're going 7/8. These are state bred fillies and mares. Have not won a race other than, or which have never won two. Or 16 claimer, but nobody's in for the tag.
Pete Aiello giving the shout out to those up at the final table. Eric Wing in the middle of the fray up there looking like a conductor in both outfit and hand gestures at the moment. Great to have Eric back here in the mix at the final table. He's been at almost all of them. I missed the last couple, but it's been great to have him back in the fold in his trademark black tie attire. And sweet man.
Just about set. Field of seven after the sweet scratch of the Cassie Barber that would have been a major player in this spot off the been off since July of last year. Here we go. Waiting for the picks that'll reveal, and we'll try to get a snapshot.
Good start for the favorite. Let's be honest. She
there they are.
Well.
7-5-7. 8-3-7. 5-4-6-2.
Leader on the 7, John Vale with that big $20 lead. As predicted, Ray Arsenault going with the cap horse, the 5. Eric Bielik also looking to make a big move. He's gravitating towards that cap horse, the 5. Let's listen to Pete Aiello.
Now the trailer takes two to wiggle. They go to the half-mile grounds, and it's Let's Be Honest who comes through inside to take the lead. Sweet Mia, who will have to counterpoint second. Mandamus is a 3-wide third. On from fourth, Grand Reserva. She's made a steady bid, and all the way up to within 2 lengths of the lead. Philly Jean King is next at the back bar, takes two to wiggle, and La La Lee. 5/16 to go. Let's be honest, Matt Davis, Sweet Mia, they're across the course here. Grand Reserve is a 4-wide for him. Looking for racing room. Philly Gene King's got a shot. Vasquez is going to try to threaten. Benito Castellano's going to try to deny him that opportunity. And in fact, it was outside where Philly Gene King had to go as Sweet Mia made the lead. There's 3/16 to go. Sweet Mia the leader. Philly Gene King is going to pose a late threat as Miguel straightens her to the clear. Final 16th of the ball. Sweet Mia tackled by Philly Gene King on the outside. Philly Gene King tries to reach Sweet Mia. Sweet Mia, Philly Gene King, these two.
Ooh. Let me tell you something. When they show the head on, this is a hurting like you'll see on
yeah,
any.
I didn't see that. But
you
I'm
watch.
Like, yeah.
This, the eight horse just kept hurting in mid stretch. Watch for the head on.
Sweet Mia at 4-1.
Looks like Thomas Goldsmith has the eight. The only player at the final table to have the eight. Two players have the six.
Although it is a close photo and the race is unofficial.
No, I lied. One player has the six. That's our buddy Ralph.
That's Magnetti. Magnetti's got the show horse, the place horse, and we'll see about Tom Goldsmith picking the winner at 4-1. And I want to see a head on.
Do you think they'll look at it, Steve?
We'll see.
Contestant Ralph Magnetti had the six. Philly Gene King. We'll await the results of the photo.
Potentially 5-6 points for Magnetti, but very significant points here for Thomas Goldsmith if this result holds up. Significantly will close that gap.
Doesn't seem like they're going to look, but we'll see.
The action doesn't let up either at the DraftKings final table because our second of seven mandatory races comes up in just 19 minutes.
19 minutes. So you know what? While they're, we'll see if they're looking at it, but let's take the break. Casey needs a break here for us for editing purposes. So a perfect opportunity. We'll wait to see if this is going to get looked at. I thought it looked to me like Sweet Mia in mid-stretch was doing a little bit of hurting on the oncoming Philly Gene King, who really did run back to that good effort in the hut. Back after this, Roger Satina with us, Pete Fornatel. We're coming to you from NHC 2020, the Bally's Las Vegas.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BIC, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BIC. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 years old and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life.
but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to